Welcome to the Behind the Shield podcast. As always, my name is James Gearing, and this week it is my absolute honor to welcome back onto the show, Darolk, and to welcome for the first time, Dr. Mark Bubbs. Now, Mark is a performance nutritionist, author, speaker, and consultant for a portfolio of professional and Olympic athletes and Fortune 100 companies. Rolk is a movement specialist who has worked with multiple agencies, including the city of Anaheim, where I used to work. So in this conversation, we discuss a host of topics, from Mark's journey into the world of nutrition, taking care of our youth athletes, nutrition and elite sports performance, the power of sleep, working with tactical athletes, the reason he formulated his new product ProBio, and so much more. Now, with that being said, after we had finished the recording, Mark was able to get ProBio put on GovX. So the easiest way for you to find that, if that's something that you're looking for, is to go to GovX, register as a first responder, a military member, emergency medicine, etc., where you'll get 25% off plus an additional 10% off and free shipping with subscription. Now, before we get to this incredible conversation, as I say every week, please just take a moment. Go to whichever app you listen to this on, subscribe to the show, leave feedback, and leave a rating. Every single 5-star rating truly does elevate this podcast, therefore making it easier for others to find. And this is a free library of well over 1,100 episodes now. So all I ask in return is that you help share these incredible men and women's stories so I can get them to every single person on planet Earth who needs to hear them. So with that being said, I introduce to you Dr. Mark Bubbs and Darolk. Enjoy. Well, Bubbs and Rolk, I want to start by saying welcome for the first time, Bubbs, onto the Behind the Shield podcast. And Rolk, welcome back.
Good to be here, brother.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it. Thank you.
So you're on very different parts of planet Earth at the moment. So Bubbs, let's start with you. Where are we finding you this afternoon?
So I'm Canadian, but I'm not in Canada. I'm over here in the UK, just outside of London.
Brilliant. Well, I'm English and I'm in America, so we're all over the place at the moment. Rolk, what about you?
SoCal, as you know, James, out here in Southern California. So with the extreme harsh conditions that we have to deal with on this side of the planet.
Yeah, it's brutal. We're having a cold spell come in. It's going to be down in the 50s.
Oh, man. It's a little overcast today, so I might have to put a hoodie on. So that's how we...
It's a tough life.
All right. Well, Rolk, obviously, we've done a couple of discussions already, so I want to spend a little bit of time with Bubbs, just kind of getting his backstory, sure. And then we'll start bringing you in as we speak sports and tactical athlete performance.
Hey, so, James, I told Bubbs to cut his hair for today, so he actually usually has a pretty wavy hairline, but he did it just for today, so let's give him props for that, brother.
That's amazing. I'm assuming he's the same barber, huh?
Rolk, I like to be matching.
Dude, it's uniform, bro. Twinsies. I love it. It's like looking in a mirror. Love it.
So, Mark, very first question. Tell me where you were born and tell me a little bit about your family dynamic, what your parents did, how many siblings.
So I was born in Ontario, Oakville, Ontario, Canada. I've got a sister, older sister, who's actually on the West Coast as well. And mom and dad was in marketing, sales guy, you know, like to play sports, golf and all that. And my mom was French Canadian, one of 14. So,
wow,
the 14, second wow. youngest of 14. So my grandmother was a pretty amazing woman, but not the sort of sit on my knee type of grandma, you know. And you have to put 14 kids through school. She was real energetic, but that's me.
What did your mother do as far as profession?
She was a translator, so French to English, English to French. I went to all French school growing up. Always spoken to my mom since I was born in French, but I'm not native French speaker. So I really confuse the when I go to France, I really confuse them because they're not really sure where the hell I'm from. It's always a good laugh.
When you hear stories from obviously generations back, what are the nuances for the French Canadian population that are different with the rest of Canada?
I think like a lot of different populations that came over back in like the 1920s and 30s, they're a hardy population, right? You think of ice hockey, you know, almost half the league's Canadian. Got to be at least half of them are French Canadian, right? I heard some kind of funny stat that the stuntmen in Hollywood, there's a huge proportion that are also French Canadian. So there's an element of ruggedness and toughness. Certainly that's part of the elements as well. You know, when you got outdoor beer festivals and minus 20, it's a different mindset than some other places. So yeah, it's a great place. From a performance standpoint, like our Olympians in the Winter Olympics, if Quebec ever separated from Canada, we'd be down a lot of medals in those Winter Olympics because you get a lot of the skiers and moguls and all that great stuff coming out of Montreal. And it's, you know, a little piece of Europe and the North America, you know, so it's a cool place.
I used to work in upstate New York on summer camps years and years ago, and I'd go to Montreal on a days off occasionally, and they have the wettest, soggiest French toast I've ever had. It's like, I think it's just 1 degree from being completely raw. Yeah.
French Canadians are not known for the cuisine. That's the one thing, although you get the poutine is the big, you know, French fries with cheese curds and gravy. That's the hearty winter dish.
So the French were like, should we bring the recipe book with us? We're like, nah, we're fine. Just leave it there.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. What about sports? What were you playing and doing during the school ages?
Yeah, I played everything growing up, you know, baseball, basketball, volleyball, football, you know, you name it. I grew pretty quick. So, you know, I loved playing sports, being part of the team. That whole dynamic was pretty special. Grade school, high school. And, you know, a lot of the things that you learn in team sport, teamwork, leadership, how to lose, right? How to bounce back when you get your butt kicked. And now that I've got three kids who are in that sort of, you know, 12, 9, 7 age range, you just have a different perspective on sport. When you're younger, you always want to, you know, it's all about winning and trying to, you know, be the best that you can be. And then you see it as a parent, seeing it from that 30,000 foot view, you see the whole roster a little bit more, don't you? And you see the value of having roles for everybody and people building confidence and young kids building confidence, because you can start to see the inflection points for certain kids when they start to play sport and how important it can be for them. So I think it's a great space, you know, for young people. And then for those of us watching it at home or working in it, it's exhilarating as well, because the ending's not written, right? It's happening right in front of you. It's dramatic, it's stories, it's people's stories. And so, yeah, I guess it's captivated me from since I was young, and I'm still, you know, didn't quite make it to the NBA, but worked in it on the performance staff.
What's interesting, and I'm curious to get your perspective living in the UK now, but I've talked about this a lot on here, especially when it is people that work with, you know, high level athletes. When I first came here, I affectionately, you know, say I met a lot of Uncle Ricos, meaning, you know, men in their late 20s, early 30s, and had so many stories of how they could have been in the NBA, NHL, you know, major leagues, if it wasn't for, and then they reeled off, you know, a orthopedics nightmare list of injuries. And coming from the UK, where we never really had that high level of training, unless you happen to be that kind of kid that was, you know, sent into the, you know, the farms as far as, you know, Man United and Liverpool and all those kind of teams, the rest of us just played sports. And then when you graduated school and then college, usually there was more sports, you know, pub leagues and local leagues, etc. So I saw sport being played well into middle age by most people. When I came to the States, and again, you're hearing these stories, and I'm like, why are these 18, 20 year olds getting smashed to pieces? And then you see the way that they're trained in some of these colleges and schools. It really made me start asking the question, well, are we forging performance at the expense of wellness and longevity in our youth athletes? What is your perspective with this kind of multinational lens that you have now?
It's a fascinating question, because it's certainly come a long way in terms of training and nutrition over the last 25 years, 30 years that I've been doing this, a lot of positives, but also some negatives as well, in the sense of, you know, the 24/7, 365 athlete, you know, in my main sport, which is basketball, you know, we're seeing Achilles ruptures at 25, which used to be an injury for a 35, 40 year old. And so this sort of over-specialization, kids getting into specific sports really young and then, you know, hyper-specializing in that is a challenge. And I think as a culture as well, it gets trickier in North America because you're right, you don't see as, you see the sort of the softball leagues, but the sports we tend to play in North America are kind of a little bit slower and is not, we're not challenging individuals to maintain their physical capacity. And it might just be the fact that soccer, football, obviously they call it over here, is the main sport here, which requires a lot of running. So there's a certain level of conditioning you need just to hang out with your buddies and play the main sport. Whereas I think in North America, you know, we play more American football, or, you know, maybe you're just shooting hoops rather than actually playing the game. And so, you know, your level of physical fitness can, you know, doesn't need to hold up like it might do in Europe and other places. But there's certainly a lot of different aspects. I mean, nutrition being one, and but that's what jumps out at me.
Rolk, anything to add to that before we go back to the timeline?
No, not really. I think, I've noticed that as well. It's especially for us, it's getting the kids fit again. A lot of that has to do as well with the culture of social media and just not really being as active and interfacing with their peers, their teammates, et cetera. On more of a physical level, it's more just electronically. So I think a lot of it is good. A lot of the kids are a lot more knowledgeable on training protocols, nutrition protocols, just because what they see. But the application is where I'm finding that there's definitely a deficiency across all boards. So I think, like what Bub's saying, identifying these injuries and things that are going on that usually wasn't the case. But I just don't think we're doing a great job of getting our kids out there and doing what they need to do, just like they used to.
Well, this is the kind of, glaring gap that I saw was, again, you have this high level in these young people. My son was the same. He ran, ran cross country and ran track. Now he plays volleyball. But then because of that steep drop off, I mean, as we sit here recording now, over 70% of Americans are obese, are overweight, of which over 40 are obese. So there's such a huge disconnect between this high level of sport and the adoration of athletes and the, as you mentioned, just the general population continuing to move and play. It doesn't have to be, you know, winning. And I think this is the negative side of this whole, you know, looking down your nose at the whole participation trophy. As I always tell people, what happens when you finish a marathon or a Tough Mudder? Did you win? No. Do you get a trophy still? There's nothing wrong with being rewarded for putting in the effort and getting cold and dirty and tired.
You know, Bubs, I was actually gonna ask Bubs a question. Bubs, you know, when we get into with a lot of the programs from a fitness or performance perspective, I find that we're able to get people to start. It's the retention that it's always the challenge, right? Can we build consistency in it? And that's something that I experience a lot, and I know James knows, even within the first responder community, is that when you first come into your career, we first come into your season, you're dealing with individuals that are fit because they were, you know, motivated to do so. They had to do so in order to acquire the position, get on the team, get the job. But figuring out ways to kind of maintain that consistency and build build that within the individual, the organization, the team. What have you found? Because I know you've worked with so many professional teams. How do you do that from that standpoint, from what you do?
Yeah, I think this bleeds into, like, working as a performance nutritionist in elite sport and pro sport is one side of the equation. And the people that aren't professionals, those are already your gym lovers. So we don't necessarily even need to focus on them because we know they're going to show up. We know they're going to train. Right. But on the clinical side, you know, I work with the general population, and this is where even going down to your note there, James, on like the participation trophy. Yeah, like for some kids, that might be the first big pat on the back they ever get in their life that they did something. So like, let's not take that away from them. Let's continue to build some progression so they can challenge themselves. But I think this is one where for the general population, a lot of people don't like going to the gym necessarily. So how do we connect physical capacity and physical movement with other aspects of their life? You know, the things that are important to them. And this is sometimes, and I'm sure you guys have covered this here, but you know, really trying to unpack your values or what's important to you. You know, what is it that's important to you in your life? And I think if we can start connecting those dots with people of like, whether it's your daily movement, whether it's conditioning, whether it's building strength, whether it's maintaining mobility, you know, let's connect that to whether it's you wanting to work, you know, long hours, or whether it's being with your family or being able to age so that you can pick up your grandkids without, you know, losing an L4, L5. I mean, this is where we got to figure out what's important to people and then, and try to connect the dots there, because I think, and this is maybe a little bit more in North America too, we really, it becomes like a gym culture. If you got to go to the gym and get on the treadmill or go on the Stairmaster, you know, and it's like, hey, dancing's pretty great modality, right? It's a huge energy output. Yeah. There's a lot of proprioception, you know, so it's just finding the things that connect with people. And I think we haven't done a good enough job of showing in schools. And years ago, I actually taught in a school in France, and there was English kids, German kids, and French kids. And we would play soccer. And of course, all the kids that were good at soccer played, and everybody else just, you know, huddled around the middle of the field. And one of the days I noticed the girls were great at doing their cartwheels and gymnastics and stuff. So then we had a, you know, we did a, one of the days we did a warm up, and all the soccer kids were terrible at doing that. And it just flipping that equation on them to say, hey, this is a skill set you need. And this is a skill set that's important, really reframes things. And I think we can do that with adults as well, because you see with people who are struggling with, you know, they might be having important jobs, but again, the typical American, as you say, James, you know, we're overweight, blood sugars are high, blood pressure's high. We're struggling with sleep. We're struggling with mood. The environment around us is all pulling everyone downstream towards not feeling their best. And we've got to help them to swim upstream. Because if you don't actively do that, you're going to get pulled in the direction of, you know, feeling tired, feeling worse, and not feeling your best.
It's interesting when I think about, you know, acrobatics or dance and sports, I think of Georges St-Pierre from Quebec, you know, who was known to do ballet. And that was one of the things. He was so unorthodox, but he was so good because he constantly trained different modalities and, excuse me, did a lot of the, you know, calisthenics, you know, body weight stuff, and, you know, but ended up out wrestling the wrestlers and out striking the strikers. And I think it was probably because he wasn't just in that single silo. He was allowing himself to explore other movement modalities too.
Yeah, and you can see it in some of the kids when you see them. I work with Canada Basketball, so director of nutrition last 15 plus years. And when we get these younger kids, 10, 11, 12, 13, and you can see all the different ways that they can move. And, you know, we still do a good job, but I think in general, when you get that specialization, as they come out 18, 20, 21, they're not nearly as, you know, the movement capacity can sometimes leave a little to be desired, in a sense that they can move really well on the basketball court. But to your point, James, like they don't have enough cross training or movement and other modalities that helps to complement that. And I think that's a big part of the issues with injuries. And for the rest of us in the regular life, it's like sitting down all the time or the things that we constantly do, and we don't do enough to reverse that, or to, you know, let our brains know that we want to be able to move these limbs in other capacities as well.
Absolutely. Well, Bubs, back to the school age then. When you were thinking as far as career aspirations, was it already the sports world or even the nutrition world, or was there something else in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I got into the sports world, and then it was about, you know, health and medicine. I got sick my last year of high school. I was constantly run down and constantly sick. And at that time, this is like, you know, mid to late 90s, you know, typical athlete trying to bulk up, loads of milk, loads of breads, all that kind of stuff. And at that time for me, it was just creating a lot of issues with my immune system. You know, I was lactose intolerant. The breads were creating a lot of struggles with phlegm, et cetera. And so you're just getting sick all the time. And you see this a lot in younger athletes. And so connected with a nutritionist, they changed my diet. All of a sudden, all that went away. So that really put it in my mind of like, wow, this stuff that we're eating and putting in our bodies is actually has a massive change, you know, rather than getting up in the morning and just blowing your nose and having all this congestion, you wake up and you feel, you know, zero congestion, brain feels good. And, you know, at that time, this is like almost 30 years ago, this was pretty novel back then. And so, you know, going to university, I thought I wanted to go down the medical route. Nobody in those classes was doing exercise or really cared about what they ate. So it was sort of like, ooh, this is a little strange here. Is this my community here? I'm not really too sure. which to me now is ironic because obviously 30 years later, it's great to see that that exercise and nutrition is whatever doctor's talking about. Because even as an intuition back then, you're like, surely when they talk about an athlete's heart rate, it's 50 or 40 and the typical person's 90. I'm like, shouldn't we all be aiming for a bit more athletic then? Like, why are we considering normal to be 80 to 90? Whereas now we, you know, this is, we can do better. So I actually took a bunch of years off after university. I went traveling. I worked abroad, traveled to Latin America, worked in France for a year. I just wanted to explore and see the world and see how different people live. And I think that helped shape a little bit of my practice now, because you just see it done in so many different ways, so many different cultures and countries, the way they move or don't move, what they eat or don't eat, and the, all the differences. Yet you have healthy individuals from, you know, whether it's Central America or France or all the way over to, you know, to India and Asia. And after that, I decided to go into the nutrition side and the S&C side. And, you know, the last 20 years plus been doing that, and fortunate enough to do it in sport. And also, you know, again, with the general population, which those wins oftentimes feel bigger than the sport ones, because you really are making a huge change in someone's life, right? Like if they're struggling, those kind of wins are, you know, really hit home.
When you mention about bulking up, this is a kind of aha moment that I've had. And bearing in mind, this is coming from someone who's not a professional athlete, but, you know, I had this mindset for tactical athlete. And so I did do strength and conditioning. I did do a lot of gear training, and then obviously running the calls, having the fire. So it's not like, you know, 5-6 hours a day, if we're being realistic, in the fire service. So when you look at the sporting community, that seems to be when we were all young, that was where the nutritional advice was coming from. And I feel, just, you know, listening to my body, that we were told to eat way too many, you know, calories, way too much protein, et cetera. And you became kind of fixated on if you weren't, but bulking up, air quotes, to be a bodybuilder is very different than performing at a high level in a tactical athletic profession, for example. So when you reflect back to the early years where a lot of the nutrition and strength conditioning advice was coming from the world of bodybuilding, what are some of the misunderstood or misinformation from that kind of conversation that has kind of being myth busted recently for the average person?
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the head, where traditionally this, a lot of the nutrition came right out of the bodybuilding space. And so it became this thing of, if you want to get bigger or get leaner, we're going to eat loads of meals in a day. We're going to all pre-prep our food and carry it around in Tupperwares. You know, we're going to consume a lot of protein. And there's certainly a lot of great things that have come out of what bodybuilders do in terms of informing good practice. And then there are elements that are, you know, not as impactful for the typical person. Like, you know, we don't need to, eating six meals a day is not going to boost your metabolism, right? Like, this is something that's been disproven. And so when we're talking about the rest of us who have kids at home or busy jobs, or if you're working in tactical or fire, like, how do we make it stick, right? How do we make it practical? Like, being in practice over 20 years, I've had clients, I've seen their kids, and now their kids have kids. And so over, if you've had a client for 20 years, you get a good handle on what they can actually stick with. And I think this is where, you know, those core fundamentals of being patient and putting things in place that people can actually repeat. And so, you know, when we talk about protein, people now today, we talk about these high protein diets. Nothing much has changed in the research in the last 10 years. You know, there's basically three good numbers. You know, 1.2 grams per kilogram is the lowest number you should ever be at, because that's the one that's going to serve you to prevent age-related sarcopenia, so losing muscle as you get older. So we want your worst day to be more than that. And I think if you go back to like the early O's and whatnot, then that, you know, the RDA is 0.8, and lots of people were still struggling to get that, right? As you move up, you know, 1.6 grams per kilo, that becomes 0.73 grams per pound. That's where most of the benefits are. And so you hear all this talk about a gram per pound body weight. The overwhelming majority of people, if they just get to that 1.6, they're going to get loads of benefit, but it's much more repeatable over time, you know? Certainly, if you have really pronounced body composition goals, you can go up to a gram per pound. If you struggle with cravings and appetite, you know, you can bump that up. But for me, keeping people, and these are the first two things I try to automate, because there's not much in nutrition you can automate, is meal frequency and the protein intake. you can think of that like serving as the foundation of the house, because whether you want to get bigger or leaner, all we need to do then is turn the dials on the energy in the diet, right? But if the challenge for a lot of shift workers is that if the meals are irregular and the fueling gets irregular, as in some meals have loads of fuel and other meals have little fuel, or you're missing meals, that's a little tougher on the brain and the nervous system in terms of, you know, the body's going to kind of want more, or the cravings will be more pronounced. And of course, when your sleep's interrupted and you have these very, very long days or physical days, that all connects. But certainly, yeah, protein's a key pillar along with meal frequency. But to how you set this up, we don't need to go nearly as high as the bodybuilders did back in the day, but they were certainly onto something. And if you could think your whole body is, if you're a house, protein's the bricks, right? So it's not just muscle, it's immunity, skin, hair, nails, hormones, everything. So we definitely want to make sure we're getting a sufficient amount.
I remember back in my sports science days, them talking about there was only so much you could absorb. So there's only so much to kind of intake on a single meal. What's the science around that these days?
Yeah, we can absorb loads. I mean, it doesn't make much sense from an evolutionary perspective to think that we'd be looking for food for, you know, days or weeks, and all of a sudden you found something like, oh, you can only absorb this much. Sorry, we wouldn't have made it very long. And so there's upper plateaus in terms of the effect or benefit on muscle protein synthesis, but then there's also an effect on limiting muscle protein breakdown. And so you can get to larger boluses and have a benefit. I think from a practical perspective, in everybody's daily life, you know, breakfast is the meal of the day that we consume the least amount of protein, right? Like most people, even if you're having 3 eggs in the morning, that's 18 grams of protein. But the key amino acid here is leucine, right? That's the one that triggers muscle protein synthesis. And you can think of it more like a dimmer switch than a light switch, right? So 1.8 grams of leucine, that key amino acid, isn't enough for a man to be able to really maximize muscle protein synthesis. And if you're bigger or you're older, you need more as well. And so that's where having, you know, a supplement or adding a fourth egg. Some people don't want to do that for various reasons. But that's where adding additional amino acids can be really beneficial, right? Because it maximizes that effect. And that really sets you up for the day. Because if you don't have a good first meal, and, you know, we can talk about fasting if you want to go down that road. But if you struggle with grabbing stuff on the go with a really high sugar or quickly absorbed meal, in that sense, a big bolus of energy, you're going to have these real ups and downs of energy. And that's tough when you got to be on point a lot of the day, or if you're a shift worker and you just never know when you're going to need to really be on point, because those lows can be pretty low.
Rolk, bringing you in for a second again,
sure.
the kind of multi-decade lens that you have in this space as well. What has been the shift as far as your philosophies on nutrition versus maybe what you believe when you were young?
You know, it's interesting. We talk about the standard all the time, James, in a tactical space, right? What is the standard of a department? What is the standard of a station? What's the standard of a team? And I find that a lot of people now are talking about how the standard has been lowered, right? So we've lowered the standard to make sure that everyone can fit the bar. So in order to raise the standard, we talked about initially, even before nutrition, is how do we get people to engage in this whole fitness journey, right? To stay fit, the retention of it. And it was really about finding that purpose. We need to make sure guys started or went into, became a firefighter, became a law enforcement officer, went into the military for a reason. They had a purpose for it. And that's how we achieve the discipline that's required in order to get that consistency. But I think lots of times what happens is guys lose sight of it because of injuries, because of aspects of the job and the training that kind of fall short. And I think we started to dissect and deconstruct why that is. A lot of people would look at, oh, it's all about the training. Training is one element of it. It's one pillar of it. But predominantly, it was always about nutrition and supplementation. The guys weren't eating correctly. Of course, there's a variety of different things that go into it, because there's aspects of sleep, aspects of recovery, et cetera. But I'm finding a lot of the guys from nutrition, you know, they were so much about protein. Everyone's like protein, protein, protein. It's important. But I think there were so many other supplements and deficiencies that guys were finding in their everyday nutritional plans that they're trying to figure out how to supplement. And a lot of within the tactical space, as you can speak on, James, and we both know, we're always looking, oh, this is a new supplement we can take. This is a new thing we're going to take. So inevitably, these guys are going to have like just a kind of a whole cabinet full of pills, and they don't know what to take. So it's kind of like, I tried this. This worked for a while. It falls off. I'll try this. This falls off. Like, they keep going on and on. And so for me, it's now, you know, we'll start talking about ProBio, which is a company that I came on board with Bubs on, but trying to find ways to be more efficient with the guys, because we have to be realistic, whether it be with the training process, whether it be with nutrition, we have to be realistic. You know, you can't take a whole bowl full of pills. Guys can't train on the job for 2 hours. It's just impossible. So how do we build consistency? So that's all about shorter, consistent workouts, not so focused on intensity, but getting them moving again. From a supplementation perspective, it's all about, hey, what's the right balance? Are we hitting all the markers that we need? And I think Bubs can talk more specifically about all the things that are necessary and go into it. But that's what I gravitated toward, you know, things that we've created with Bubs and the ProBio team is just exciting. That I think it's the new way to raise the standard within at least the tactical space, military, law enforcement, and fire. So.
When you were talking about that, when I'm thinking about some of my supplement routine, the danger was an overlap, because, you know, this one might have, you know, the thing that you're taking it for, but it might be some extra B vitamins. And then I've got a nootropic that's got extra B vitamins. And then I've got something else that's got extra B vitamins. And all of a sudden now you're bright yellow
it's so funny, James and Bubs, you know about it too. It goes into bro science, right? Bro science is like, listen, man, I'm taking this multivitamin, and then I'm taking another one, and then this third one's supposed to be awesome. Now I'm taking three multivitamins. They told me to take 2 creatine, but I'm a big guy, so I'm going to take 6 creatine serving. It's like bro science, right? The bro science starts to build, and us, you know, it's always more is better. And I think what guys don't understand is you just be efficient with it. And so I find that's why there's been so much excitement about things like ProBio, because it's just like one scoop and you're good. Like, let's move on with it. And you can sustain that, because what happens even with my training, and James, you know, you've gone through it. We've gone through it with all the guys, you know, at the academy, they're gung ho. They're like, bro, bring it. Like, they'll train 8 hours a day. These young kids are coming out, trying to get on the department. 5 years in, now it's like, oh, we got, you know, we'll do a couple hours here and there. Dude, 10, 12, 15 years in, bro, you're chasing these guys. It's like they're running to the bathroom is pretty much the cardio. So you're kind of like, bro, like, let's figure out ways to get in very efficient, smart, thoughtful ways to get these guys moving specifically. So, I mean, think even with the training protocols that I've been kind of outlaying for a lot of the departments, it's much more about what do we focus on, getting joint stabilization, focusing on mobility, you know, aspects, a lot of body weight movements to kind of get these guys doing it on a daily basis, because they can't be smashed going right back onto a call. You know, it's great. It's like these guys think that for an athlete, you have practice, you're preparing for a game. After the game, you go home, you recover. These guys are on shifts, you know, sometimes for 4 hours, 4 days, 4 days in a row. And you can't be that sore. So there's a lot of other aspects you have to think about. But really, a lot of guys that aren't recovering, they look into what's your supplement protocol like, what's your nutrition like, what's your sleep like. And so those are ways that I've been focused on trying to kind of, you know, to try to help and supplement and support in every way I can.
Well, Bubs, you talked about fasting for a split second. Let's just kind of open that, because there are so many different philosophies now, so many different trains of thought. Some camps believe that their way is the only way that every human should eat, which we're on a big round planet that's flying through the universe. I'm pretty sure that's not the case. So talk to me about fasting. And then if you want to highlight pros and cons of some of the most well-known eating philosophies as well.
Yeah, I mean, everything's a tool. Right. And your job as a practitioner is to, like a caddy in golf, you know, you got 14 clubs in the bag. All right. What shot do you have to hit? Okay. Here are your options. Here's the 1, 2, and 3. And I think the disservice that we've done to the general public, especially with media, is we're constantly chasing this new thing or the pumping things up and then chasing that thing. And then all of a sudden we find out, well, actually that wasn't as good as we thought, but check out this new thing. And it always goes in the same cycle. Right. And so if people can understand a bit more of how to use the tools, it's great, because then they can block out the noise. You know, expression we use is no time for noise, right? You're busy, you got things to do. Yeah. We can't be bogged down with making all these decisions. And when it comes to things like fasting, can be super effective. I mean, the original research, which showed a lot of weight loss, didn't actually do any DEXA scans for body composition. So afterwards, we realized they were losing a lot of muscle. And so this is where, you know, the best approach for an individual or a key take home might be that you can still eat protein in the morning and it doesn't interfere with any of the beneficial effects of fasting. Or if you want to do more of an intermittent fasting style where you start eating at 11 or 12, you still try to hit your daily dose for protein, right? So if you're having three or four meals between 12 and 4, getting that 30 to 40 grams per meal, you know, trying to hit that dose, so maybe it's a lunch and a shake and a dinner, is really beneficial. Now, you can do longer fasts. The challenge becomes what you're being asked to do, like to what Roque was saying. Like if you're in a place where you're going to always be doing really high outputs, your daily outputs are high, your daily you know, need, just the amount of steps you take in a day are already high, it's really difficult to do extended fasts and still be able to then run up 30 flights of stairs when your glycogen levels are depleted. And so one of the things listeners can think about is that when you sleep at night, right, your liver and your muscle have glycogen, they have carbohydrate stores, right? And so when you go to sleep at night, your liver basically drains itself of all those carbohydrate stores. And that's a signal for the brain then to upregulate fat oxidation, right? And so that's why if you train in the morning, you're going to burn more fat and more what we call intramuscular fat, right? So the fat in the muscle is going to get burned more, which if you're struggling with weight gain is amazing, right? Because that's a powerful influencer to improve your insulin levels, right? And so for that individual, getting up in the morning and doing some lifting in a fasted state might be a great option. If I'm working with somebody who's leaner and who has really high outputs, that same strategy might not be a really good choice, you know? And so I think the beauty of fasting is it makes things simple, right? Don't eat anything, you know, drink a coffee and your whole morning's open, right? So it's easy to apply, which is great because that's one of the things that goes missed even in pro sport of like, people have so many things to do in a day. You can't give them a 48-point plan to how to go to bed, right? It's like, it's not going to work. We need to make things efficient, effective, you know, evidence-based. And the nice part then is if you give somebody, and this is what I learned, you know, throughout my practice going back 10 years, is like, if I can get someone to do something small and they can see a really tangible benefit, especially when we deal with things like weight loss or blood sugars or blood pressure, where people are kind of used to losing, right? Like they're used to doing so much and struggling with very little return on investment. If you can flip that script and get them doing something small and actually feeling a big benefit, all of a sudden we get a lot more internal motivation, right? You get the athlete or the client saying, hey, what's next? You know? And that was one of the big things of even just giving people one thing to do or two things to do, right? Not 12 things to do, because let them do it well, repeat it, and then we'll give you the next piece.
Hey, Bubs, quick question for me. You know, dealing with someone, I get this question a lot. I think, James, you do as well. From general population and athletes in general, you know, you kind of like, hey, get to bed early, make sure you're getting your 8 hours of sleep, 9 hours of sleep, recover, wake up early, do these things. And just specifically within the fire community, it's so challenging to do that when they're at the station because, you know, their circadian rhythms are all disrupted. They're like, hey, listen, let me crash out, rack out, get 2 hours here, wake up. You're going to have to go without sleep. Then you back up and sleep. So they're all over the place. And we always talk about the hormone disruption. But from a supplementation perspective, like what should they be taking? Like a lot of guys, like prior to going to sleep, like, oh, they don't want to take magnesium because they got to be ready to, like, they're like, what is that going to put me in a deeper sleep? I can't be in a deep sleep when I'm on shift because then I got to be up and be sharp and be ready to go. What do you recommend from the standpoint of timing for a lot of these guys when it comes to when to take what supplements, what nutrients are helpful to get sleep and maybe a short little burst? Because that's more realistic for a lot of the guys, because I think, James, you can lean in on this too. A lot of the recommendations that we get off of nutritional support are people that work 9-to-5 jobs, sleep at this time, wake up at this time. So guys are like, that doesn't help me, right? And inherently, when they don't do it because they don't want, you know, they don't want deep sleep because they go, I can't get deep sleep. Like, I need restful sleep. I need to be enough that I can then go and do my job. So what do you recommend there, brother?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. I think the first thing is if you're doing night shifts, and then you're having to get up, you're having to turn it around pretty quick in the morning, Right. We got some pretty good data. This comes out of the UK, Bath University, where if you had a really short night's sleep and then you wake up in the morning and the first thing you do is go for caffeine and coffee, you get a really pronounced blood sugar response that leads into all the way through the morning in the middle of the day. So if you need to perform, by all means, go for it. But if you had a really short sleep, you're getting up in the morning and you can kind of ease into your day a little bit, I would try to delay that coffee to when you're actually having a meal. So don't give that jolt right away. If we come back to what you're suggesting, which is maybe these little naps in the day and how to be able to not be too, you know, not wake up in the deeper part of your sleep, keeping the naps shorter is key, right? Like 30 minutes. So just putting some music on, put something over the eyes. You know, you're going to be getting into that alpha brainwave activity, kind of recharging a little bit rather than just being in that kind of stressed go, go, go mode. And from a nutrient standpoint, right. I mean, this is magnesium. All the B vitamins play a huge role, right? Like the higher your stress levels, the more magnesium. Magnesium makes ATP. That's the energy currency of the whole body, right? And, you know, stress will do it. Caffeine, alcohol will increase our needs, right? Deplete levels. If you're smoking things like marijuana, that'll also increase the demands. Guys on medications, if you're on blood pressure meds or heartburn meds, then that increases demand. So that's a key one. And then, you know, things like folate, a B vitamin, really key for energy. If you're not eating your greens, you know, you're going to struggle with having sufficient levels. B12 is key as well, but typically guys will eat enough protein. So you get B12 and all the animal protein, which will get covered. And certainly there'll be, you know, female firefighters listening and they're much better on the greens front, but those are key ones. And that's where making sure you're getting those in and, you know, getting enough carbohydrate, which we can almost come back to your earlier comment about bodybuilders, James, like now we've got data to show where the amount of grams per kilogram that they take if they're a regular bodybuilder versus the elite and the best. So, you know, 3 to 5 grams per kilo. So we just have a better understanding. And so if you are somebody that's, you know, fitter and leaner, sprinkling in those carbohydrates throughout the day is going to be pretty big to be able to keep up your outputs. But again, that same strategy for a guy that's got to lose 30 pounds and is really struggling, we're going to have a different approach there because we want to help that individual use more of their own fuel, right? Because even if you're 10% body fat, like you've got 30,000 calories of energy at that leanness, right? So somebody who's got 25% body fat, they've got all the energy they need on them. We've just got to help them be better at using it. And that's when we can talk about the types of exercise or how we might time nutrition or reductions in carbohydrates, all that good stuff.
Well, Rob,
is that also for gut health as well, Bubs? Like, you know, because I think a lot of the guys see one of the struggles, as you know, James, we again, just leaning on James, just because of, you know, our relationship with the fire community is guys go in and go, listen, because of my sleep disruption, I haven't had a chance to eat. It's, you know, I have sporadic meals throughout the day. So then my gut health is up, like my stomach's upset. I'm not regular. All these things are happening. Is there certain, like, in what supplements are really helpful to kind of help guys stay regular when they have a high stress job with not, you know, kind of regular sleep patterns, that kind of a thing?
Yeah, I think one of the great things from a food perspective to start with would be things like yogurt, right? We take probiotics, but really they're much better taken up and have a much better effect when they're taken in from foods, right? So having yogurt, fermented foods in the diet's massive. Right. If you're acutely sick, a probiotic helps with, you know, duration, severity of illness. But otherwise, yogurt's great or kefir. From a supplement standpoint, this is where prebiotics are a really big win because the prebiotics is the food for all the bacteria in your gut. Right. And so if we can, just like seeding a garden, if we can get more prebiotics, which is typically coming in from a lot of the indigestible fibers from all the fruits and veggies that we all should be eating, but sometimes, you know, don't get enough of, or if you're in a really, you know, in sport, we call it a compressed schedule where you got all these games with not a lot of rest days. In tactical or firefighting, you guys are on compressed schedules all the time, right? Because you're with these windows. And so having something that supports like a prebiotic is nice because it helps on the just keeping you regular front, preventing bloating and discomfort. It helps on the immune front, right? So supporting immune function to prevent colds and flus. And then when we talk about inflammation, it helps to build up things like butyrate, these short chain fatty acids in the gut that are doing all this nice signaling and helping to keep us, you know, keep our levels of inflammation down. So that's a pretty nice 1-2 combination of like trying to get your probiotics from your food. And then that supplemental prebiotic is a good place to start.
Nice.
Well, you mentioned.
Hey, James.
No, go for it.
Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry, James. But, no, James.
Go for it.
No, I was just going to ask. We were talking about fasting because I was joking because I was going to say, do you fast, James?
So it's weird. I've always been very kind of in tune with my body. And so there's mornings where I'm just craving for toast first thing. And there's times where I'll go do a workout in the morning and then come back and eat. And so it's very kind of intuitive. But it's not so much fasting. And I'd be curious to get your perspective on this because I've never really heard anyone discuss it. My philosophy is less about, well, let me not ingest any carbs and let me try and stay in ketosis, but more about, well, let me just not put anything that my digestive system has to really process. So if I have a cup of coffee, if I had a shake, whatever it is, it's still in the liquid form. So what is your stance on that? Because, I mean, when we think of fasting, we're thinking about ketosis specifically and not ingesting any carbohydrates. What if someone has fluids, you know, as the first thing in the morning and then delays the time before they put an actual solid food in their stomach? Does that have an impact at all?
Yeah, it's a great question. And this is where you get back to really trying to reinforce physiology of things to help people understand. And I think one of the best aha moments people can have when they fast is how well or not well they deal with it, right? Because again, if you just slept all night, we talked about that liver glycogen, all the carb stores in your liver are now down to zero. You get up in the day, you're moving around, so you're using all the carbohydrate stores in your muscles. But eventually, at some point in the day, you're going to burn through all of those. And so that gas tank is down now too. And so your body then needs to upregulate fat oxidation. And that's like flipping a switch again in the body to be able to do that efficiently. And if you're somebody who struggles on either side, you could be somebody who's overweight, you know, high blood sugars, et cetera, you know, central adiposity, belly fat, right? And then you might really struggle with blood sugar ups and downs because the body's just not really good at doing that, right? And so that person might not want to do such a big fast to start with because it's a bit like getting them under the bar for a 400-pound deadlift right off the jump when it's like, okay, let's build them up a little bit here. So there's that side of it. For the really fit people, they might be so used to eating 5-6 meals a day that they become so good at processing carbohydrate that they do start to sacrifice a bit on the fat oxidation side of being able to just use their own fuel reserve. So I think it's a good, you know, it's a great tool to use for real athletes or people that are really having to physically perform in the moment. It's probably better to do in like the off season or a different part or a low demand part of your week or month. But I like that idea. You know, being able to just put liquids in is nice. It does give the digestive system a rest, which, you know, these days we're putting in so much ultra processed food that that's probably a good thing. The body can help repair and heal. And if you're someone that notices a lot of joint issues or a lot of congestion, this is a really big one because we start to ask people, and I get them often to do this just into lunchtime, don't eat anything, right? They have lots of congestion. You know, they're constantly clearing their throat. They have a lot of, they wake up with joint pain. You get them not to eat anything until noon or three. And all of a sudden, you know, clear as a bell, no congestion, or the joints start to feel better. You know, that's a subjective way of telling us, hey, there's things that are going into the system, right? There's things that you're eating that are causing these reactions. And we got to start to do some detective work to figure out what those things are. We used to think we could run tests for this, like things like food sensitivity tests and that, but those don't work. So you gotta just do the detective work. And like you said, James, it's where people have, it's great when you can empower people and they start to be able to feel it for themselves. Cause they say, when I do X, I can feel better, whether it's energy or joints. Tricky part with fasting is that you gotta just find the balance. You can get too much of a good thing, right? If we just keep, you know, not eating through the week, then all of a sudden we're going to get in some problems with, you know,
Bubs, do you fast, muscle loss, et cetera. Do you fast, Bubs?
I've done lots of different kinds of fasting. These days with kids, I mean, the mornings, I'm a bit like you, James. Like some of the mornings, I'll just get up, have a coffee, and, you know, I don't even decide to fast. Just life gets in the way. And next thing you know, it's lunch. I'll try to keep, you know, the protein intake, maybe have a shake or whatnot in the morning to be able to keep that up. But yeah, I think that's one. If anybody's locked into one way or the other, anybody who's really like, oh, I can only do this and I can't do that, that's not ideal because you're likely leaving some wins, you know, some gains on the table there because your body's just too dialed into one way of, you know, oxidizing, processing energy.
You guys are weapons, man. I try to fasting. My fasting is in between meals. That's my fast.
That's actually the best way of.
I fast in between breakfast and lunch, in between lunch and dinner. That's my fasting process.
That's a great knowledge bomb, because for most people, when I talk to them, that's like, this is how about we start with not snacking between every meal. You know, rather than going from zero to 100, it's like, let's just go the old school, like our parents, grandparents, right? Three square meals.
Dude, I love. Dude, James, how much do you weigh now, bro?
Because
you're a weapon.
No, I'm still 176 now. So I was 168 the whole time I was a firefighter, which I would argue was a little bit underweight for 6 foot tall. But then I, when I got off shift and was sleeping, then I actually did a cycle of peptides with Transcend.
Oh, wow.
Went on them for a bit, came off them, and it just added like about 10 pounds more of body weight over, you know, still training and everything. And then a bit came down again, but it kind of leveled me out at about 175, which I feel is just a slightly healthier weight now. So I did sleep and nutrition and all those things. But after 14 years of not sleeping, I'm like, I bet you there's a deficit. So, and then also trying to self experiment, because you've got all these first responders that, I mean, if you ask them, their testosterone is in the toilet. And then what happens is they get, oh, well, you need TRT then. Well, no, you don't. You're 28 years old. You need ideally sleep, nutrition, strength training. But if you can't get those, I mean, one of my Anaheim friends messaged me the other day, he's just finishing up a 120 hour shift, 5 days straight. Wow. So clearly he's not going to be getting any rest and recovery. So that's the group, I think, where the peptides can help. But I wanted to show that you can come off them too. Like, use it for a bit as a little bit of a boost, but then, you know, don't rely on it. Don't rely on blood pressure meds. Don't rely on anything. You know, the body should be amazing at taking care of itself. But long answer to your question. But yeah, at 51, I'm still about 176 now.
Bubs, what about you? What do you weigh?
182.
Oh, you weapons, dude. I think combined, you guys are what I am.
Yeah, but you're a completely different body shape, though.
It's like looking at my two thighs. I'm like, hey, what's up, guys?
I can't back crawl for miles either, though, so there we go.
Dude, I don't know, bro. It's like ridiculous. I just came. It's every time, like, oh, it's like every time you go on the scale, and my I was there. I was training with my son, my older son, and I got on the scale, and it's pretty bad when he looks down and he goes, whoa, that's...
Come on
now. He's like, maybe got new batteries. You may put new batteries in there. Maybe like check out the batteries. Maybe
it's gotta be something. Get your foot off the scale, son.
Yeah. I was like, get away. I mean, he's like, dude, I'm 5 feet away, Dad. I mean, it's all, never mind. Your you're
aura.
Too close to me.
It's your aura. Well, speaking of that, that's a good kind of segue just quickly. When I had a really interesting conversation with James, and I'm blanking on his last name. It just fell out my head. Mixed martial arts fighter. Made the Game Changers plant-based documentary.
Wilkes,
James
Wilkes,
thank you.
Yeah.
James, and, yeah, I love
and
Wilkes.
It was a great conversation, but he, you know, when you speak to some of these guys, they're like all in, you know, in that camp. And then he was on Joe Rogan, and they had people tearing apart his documentary, and they're all kind of from a carnivore point of view. And I just remember listening going, this was 6 hours between the two conversations they talked about this. And it's like, but rather than saying my way is the best, why are you not looking at where the lines overlap? And the lines overlap in carnivore and keto and paleo and all these other ones with removing crappy processed food from your diet. That's really the common denominator. So talk to me about that. What, you know, regardless of the eating philosophy, because I would argue that an Aboriginal from Australia and an Inuit would probably have, you know, different dietary habits. Finding whatever seems to align with you, but really focusing on the common denominator of removing the ultra processed foods that we're just, you know, saturated with in Western society.
Yeah. Like, I think there's a couple things there. One of them, despite the fact that there's more kind of researchers and practitioners on social media, there's still not nearly enough, right? So real experts wouldn't pit one diet versus another. They know they're all tools, and the principles, if you zoom up to 30,000 feet, we get back to that notion of like, well, how many grams is it per kilo per pound for that person? You can pick how you want to do it. Carbohydrates, how many grams per pound or grams per kilo? You can pick if you want to go this way or that way, you know, paleo or vegan. And I think that's where, like you say, there's so many commonalities between the diets that if we can help people do that, then that's a big first step. And then, like you say, for most people, ultra processed food is a big problem because it's, you know, over half the household spending in the UK, Canada, and the US is on ultra processed food. Right, I'm over here in the UK. If I get on a train for an hour and a half, I get into France, that drops to 13%. If you go around the Mediterranean, it's like 10%, 15% at Spain and Italy and Greece and all these places. And so this whole Mediterranean diet, we're trying to blame it all on the olive oil. The fact that they consume so much fewer energy, calories, right? It's because they're eating more real food than we are. Now that's starting to change a little bit because they're, you know, the processed food machine is starting to infiltrate all different areas. But that's a huge one. And I think this is where, for me, when I work with clients, it's always like start of the day, end of the day. Really try to do well at the start of the day and the end of the day. I don't care so much about what happens in the middle, right? Most, two-thirds of people now eat what we call late eating after 6:30 at night, right? The later we eat, like 8 p.m. dinners, the more likely it's going to be ultra-processed, the more likely it's going to be prepackaged, the more likely there's going to be alcohol, candy, sugars, right? So we're backloading just a load of fuel, which for a tactical or firefighter, there might be elements of that that we could actually work with depending on when you've got to perform. But as a general rule, that's not ideal because it's going to mess up with your sleep, right? You're going to wake up the next morning, you have a much more pronounced blood sugar response to your same breakfast you normally have. So how can we get back to eating, you know, more real food is a big one. And that's a common ground between, like you say, whether it's vegan or paleo, they both agree on the generally on the fruits and vegetables aspect of it. And I think just helping people with the first and last meals of the day, because if you kind of mess up breakfast, or if you're not intending to fast and you end up fasting and then you're struggling and you're reaching for bars and snacks and you're constantly, you know, using the food to keep your blood sugars going, that's not ideal. And if you get home and you're starving because you haven't eaten all day and you're just backloading a huge meal, that's tough to be consistent with. So yeah, I think they're, you know, it's a challenge. They don't all have to be bad. I mean, certain ultra processed foods, like there are different degrees of this. And so if you're getting like canned sardines and things like that, then that can be beneficial, obviously. So there's ways of working around it that you can buy things that are shelf stable at home that you can kind of lean on. Frozen vegetables are great. Frozen fruits, right? They often have more nutrients than the fresh ones because they're frozen right after they're picked. So those are awesome to keep in your freezer. And then things, just nutrients that are key for overall health. Like then this isn't food, but you know, sunshine, vitamin D, right? As you get into the winter months, as that goes down, it's a big problem for recovery. It's a big problem for inflammation. It's a big problem for immunity. And it's one of the few micronutrients now that we really have good data on where you want to be, you know, like greater than 20 is considered normal, but for all the benefits around recovery, right? Satellite cell activation, these types of things, we want to be higher than 36. So we do want to have, you know, to your point, Rolk, like what's the standard? Well, the standard should be the standard. Yeah. And for things like vitamin D, we want that 36. For immune function, we'd even bump you all the way up to 40. And so that's where getting, you know, 2000 IU for most people through the winter months is massive, right? It has a huge impact, especially if you're somewhere with a real winter climate. So like you were saying before, a lot of these strategies can be quite simple, right? And it's like we have the knowledge, but then when you go to actually applying it or you review it with somebody, it's like, that's where the hard part is, right? Finding out how to apply it for that each individual person so it sticks for them and resonates.
Because, you know, one of the things too is not only we always talk about gut health, we talk about, you know, immunity, we talk about sleep, et cetera. But some of the guys too is even things from the standpoint of vision. Like, you know, as we're getting older myself, as you can tell, we need some help with the vision.
I wear contacts. And so like...
bro, I got contacts. I got double it up. But I was just curious because a lot of the guys and women have asked me within the tactical access space, like tactical athlete space, in relationship to are there supplements that they can take that will help with vision? You know, are there things that they could help with visual acuity, with cognitive function? What are some of the supplements and nutrients that you'd recommend for those?
This is a really cool space in the last decade or so. You know, there's a couple of key carotenoids. So these are pigments that you get in orange and yellow and red colored veggies. So like your bell peppers, things like corn, lutein, and zeaxanthin in the back part of your eye. It's called the macula. That's where these things are concentrated. And that's a huge effect on, you know, your vision, visual acuity, things like glare, contrast sensitivity. And so getting those in your diet is key. And then also the research on supplements for those two carotenoids is really impressive, right? So this comes from, I believe it's in Mexico, where these marigold flowers are really highly concentrated in these two carotenoids. And so they've patented these, and you can, you know, from a supplement form, tremendous in terms of supporting the eye. And so, you know, as you're getting towards, I'm in my mid-40s, you know, you start to notice you got to take the glasses off to see the screen and then put them back on and everything. You know, this is the time when it definitely is beneficial. It's one of the reasons why we put it in the Pro Blend. And, you know, for younger athletes even as well, it's helpful for when we look at baseball players, football, anybody performing under the lights, just all that type of stuff. Or now that we're in front of screens, you know, really great way to make sure you're, you know, you're getting what you need.
I want to.
So do those nutrients, kind of, I'm just, this is important for me, James. Okay. I'm losing my, I can't see anything, dude. So we talk about it, Bubs, all the time. So is it going to slow the process down, Bubs? Am I, or pretty soon am I going to have these, they keep getting thicker and thicker. So I'm just wondering here.
It will serve.
Whatever it's going to do to, I will go on an IV of this stuff if I need to. Otherwise, it's ridiculous.
It will certainly help to slow or delay macular degeneration, but I can't say it's going to give you restore vision.
Oh,
you
know, come on, Bubs.
Unfortunately, that's a step, Bubs, too far. Maintain, though. Maintain.
You're useless. Forget it, Bubs.
Good news is, Rob, my wife just finished optometry school, so you can come see her and she can give you those thick ass glasses.
That's it. I'm going to have her do the LASIK right in your living room. Let's go, dude.
Well, I want to take a dive into ProBio, origin story and all things that we'll find in it. But just before we do, you kind of open the door to one of the most important topics in longevity in the first responder space, and that is simply sleep. As I alluded to, you know, the schedule at Anaheim, you know, especially when they have strike teams that go out, you know, the understaffing there. And I'm trying to kind of spearhead a movement to get our first responders more rest and recovery between their shifts. But sleep deprivation is massive. And I think from not just a chronic disease perspective, but also a performance, there's a lot of passionate firefighters and police officers and dispatchers and, you know, paramedics that really want to be, you know, at the top of their game when someone calls us for their worst day. You come from a background of coaching so many high level athletes in the professional sports space and, you know, Olympic teams. Talk to me about the importance of sleep and performance in the sporting side, and what have you seen as far as a disconnect on the tactical athlete side?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating stuff going back to like the late O's, 2010s. Dr. Sherry Moss, a sleep expert at Stanford, she's doing work on collegiate athletes and trying to see what's extending their sleep, adding more sleep would do to their cognitive function to all these college athletes. They start all rolling in saying, I just had a personal best in the pool. I just scored 35 points. I just did my personal best lift in the gym. And so that, all that feedback from these athletes, even though their research originally started on the cognitive side, which we know extending sleep or getting enough sleep's got massive benefits. This is what kicked off the research into the physical side of like, wow, if we can extend sleep, you know, you're starting to see better accuracy with 3-point shots and the basketball players, serving accuracy and tennis players, sprint times, I mean, just across the board. And, you know, that kicked off an era. Roger Federer was one of the earlier adopters. Apparently it was such a big benefit for him. He was not telling any of his competitors that he was getting more sleep. He kept that one to himself for a while, which is, you know, good strategy, I guess. But as you mentioned, James, if you're, you know, firefighter, if you're working shift work, that's just real tough, right? Because you're going to be not getting that extended amount, that extended sleep in one shot that others are getting. And so being cognizant of that and really trying to, you know, think of your sleep time as like a weekly total rather than even just a nightly total. And where can you add these naps in the day to kind of, to be able to get to a weekly total that you're after or to get closer to that daily total is massive. As it trickles into the nutrition side, it's mainly a lot of these kind of cravings and these types of things that really kick up when you're not sleeping, right? Like chasing caffeine, you're going to crave sugar way more. And then this starts to put you in a real kind of up and down roller coaster for blood sugars and energy. So that's an easier said than done thing of like, okay, we got to try to find some strategies that you're bringing in as part of your nutrition or that maybe we have at the fire hall that are going to help you out, whether it's, you know, snacking on fruit to start with, whether it's to having some protein sources, whether it's having a shake, things that just help to take the edge off when you're coming out of this nap and you're having to get ready to perform. To your point, Ralph, like caffeine's a nice way to give a little bump. I think we don't need to have as big a bolus as maybe sometimes, you know, the one of the funny things of coming back from the UK now that I'm based here over to, you know, the US or Canada is just the size of the coffees, right? It's like, you know, it's like how many 700 milligrams in that thing?
Super size. It's always bigger is better, bro.
Cardiac arrest.
Oh my God, dude.
So I think some of the, you know, having a shorter, sharper amounts could be helpful for guys. And even if, you know, in some sports we have supplemental caffeine because then we know exactly what the dose is, right? Like, depending on the day you go to Starbucks, the amount of caffeine in that coffee can vary, you know, pretty wildly from one day to the next. So that can be a strategy of maybe sticking to more of an espresso versus a, you know, a venti with 500 milligrams of caffeine is a good way. So you have like smaller doses to give you that little lift, and then you won't have as big a crash in the back end. But it's certainly, it's one you got to always keep your head on a swivel, so to speak, for, because it'll pull, as you guys know, I mean, it just, it taxes everything then, right? Recovery, how you think, your ability to perform. Yeah, it's a challenge.
Yeah, I think, I mean, when you said the total hours of sleep a week, this kind of, again, illustrates the point. Obviously, the more hours that you've got, the higher you're going to perform. At the moment, we have, you know, basically most first responders working 56 hours a week. Putting an extra 24 hours in between shifts would make it a 42-hour week. So, you know, you would have that. And then, as I know that, you know, we were talking, I think, when we did the chat before, there's a massive recruitment crisis because young people are looking at this woeful mandatory overtime and they're not wanting to do it. So now a 56-hour week becomes an 80-hour week because you're told you can't go home. So you think about that, the people that you call on your child's biggest, you know, nightmare, and that paramedic trying to do the crike on their throat hasn't slept for 2, 3, 4 days. It's insanity. So from a performance point of view, yeah, it is. So, you know, from a performance point of view, so many of us to take it seriously. If we fight for this healthier work week, it will make us better firefighters, better police officers, better paramedics. And I think that's so, so important, because as people always put us side by side, oh, this person throws a ball into a hole and they get millions. We don't want to be millionaires, but I think asking for an environment that at least, you know, allows health and performance at the same time, I don't think that's an unfair ask from the country. I really don't.
Especially when the strategy is free, you know, it's like, just let them sleep. It's insane.
Absolutely. All right. Well, then let's get to ProBio then. You have this background, as I mentioned, you know, with this, you know, decades of working with high level performers. You're now obviously working with the tactical space as well. What made you design this specific product? And then talk to me about all the different nutrients that are in it.
Yeah, I mean, from a professional side in sport, you know, years and years and years of chasing athletes down hallways with pill packs, only to find them stuffed between the seats in the plane, or the equipment guy coming out and saying his shorts turned orange because he didn't take them. And then on the clinical side in my practice, coming in and guys and gals bringing out their, you know, paper bag and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 bottles of pills that they're taking. They can't really remember what they're taking it for. They're not very consistent with it. And hey, we all have that cabinet at home, right? We open it up and it's just a load of bottles of stuff. And so you think nutrition is all about consistency, just like any type of training or becoming expert in any domain, right? We got to be consistent. And that's one of the things with nutrition, you know, on the micronutrition side, helping people to be more consistent. Can we put it in a form factor that's easier to do? You know, most people, when they get up in the morning, hopefully they have a glass of water, right? So they're already performing a habit that's repeatable. And so being able to put the micronutrition into that glass, and we see it more now with these, what we call all-in-ones. Traditionally though, they're not built for purpose, as in they're sort of reverse engineered, where we're looking for marketing claims, we're looking for buzzwords, we're using proprietary blends, right? We're not really solving for a problem at the coal face or that we're seeing in practice. And so when we put together the problem, that's what we wanted to do. You know, 20 years of looking at biomarkers, your vitamin D's, your magnesiums, your B12s, your folates, what's been out of whack? Let's make sure we have sufficient levels there. We talked about protein in the morning. Let's make sure we put an extra gram of leucine so we can bump up your intake in the morning. So it's like you're getting an extra, you know, 10 grams of protein at breakfast. We know the gut gets impacted from stress and busy days and all the rest of it. So providing support there. And so this notion of being able to provide all the elements that the typical person's going to need to be able to be more resilient, show up every day so that they can, you know, as an athlete, train and recover and ultimately be ready to perform their best on game day, but you know, for the rest of us, just trying to be able to perform, you know, we call it life load, right? Like just be able to perform day to day with the workload. Obviously tactical fire is massive, but then you add the family or the kids at home and all the rest of it, you know, it's a lot. And, you know, being efficient with it and then also being able to put just the best in class ingredients in, you know, we didn't want to build anything if we weren't going to actually make a difference. And I think that's where oftentimes, and I think you alluded to in our prior chat there, like there's a lot of sizzle and not a lot of steak, so to speak, in the supplement space. You know, it's just a lot of dressing and we want to actually put something together that actually makes an impact. So that was, you know, the origin story. One of the co-founders, Paul Winsper, is also a long time in pro sport. And so, you know, the two of us got together and built out a great team, and we're New York City Marathon just coming by here. We're going to be launching to consumers. So excited. Past champion Sharon Lochetti, you know, again, we tested this out with actual elite athletes. She set the record for Boston Marathon. You know, she was taking it for 18 months before we're going to consumer here. And to our conversations about some of these biomarkers and things to keep on point, you know, like for her, it was a solution for that. Like it solved a lot of issues. You know, she had better energy. And so as a practitioner, it's like, okay, we're, you know, the thesis is holding strong. We're actually impacting people. So, you know, it's been fun and it's been great to have Duralk on board as well to be able to give us his insights on the tactical side and how it's impacting him as well.
Rogue, what are you seeing from our world as far as the application and efficacy?
Well, I think like we talked about today, we had over the course of our conversation, we talked about all the elements that need to be addressed: gut health, sleep, you know, vision, cognitive function, et cetera. But it's always been a challenge. Every time I'm training guys or working with different departments or stations, guys are saying, what should I take? These are my issues. What should I do? And so you can always make recommendations. They'll say, well, I heard about this is good. This is good. And just like Bubs was saying, there were so many things that guys were taking. They don't know how much they should take. They don't know when they should take it. And there's just a myriad of different issues. So when I got introduced, I know Paul Winsper well, and, you know, Bubs and just a A-list team of guys. And that's why the ProBlend got created. So when I try to really dissect it and look at it, there's so many applications for tactical athletes, specifically for fire. Of course, law enforcement, military as well, but just because all the challenges inherently with the long shifts, the, you know, sleep patterns, disruption of circadian rhythms, stress, etc., and all the issues they face, it's just like one scoop a day. So, you know, I've been taking it now for quite a while and I love it. You know, it's easy. It's really just, we have to make it doable in the sense of guy. Otherwise you're never going to build consistency. And we talk about consistency is the key, right? We intensity is always something everyone focuses on. Train harder, take more stuff, take more of it. We talked about the caffeine Bubs was saying, you know, if an espresso is good, why, you know, like 10 espressos are better than one espresso. I mean, yeah, it just keeps going up. So guys are sometimes over supplementing a lot of different things because they just don't know. They just want to cover all their bases. So when you have a bunch of experts and guys that are best in their field come together and create this A-list team, this varsity squad, if you will, and put together this thing for one scoop, I started taking it. I loved it. I don't kind of stand behind anything I don't believe. So that, and then I've seen all the guys that have been taking it around me, and they absolutely love it. So I'm excited. Hopefully, we talked about that standard again. This can raise the standard of nutrition and supplementation and really make an impact and a difference. And that's really why we're all doing this. So,
Bubs, what about purity and efficacy? You know, as we mentioned, the supplement world can be a very, very dirty world. I mean, I remember Jeff Nichols talking about one protein company and they were actually putting anabolic steroids in the powder for, I think it was a couple of months. And they knew that by the time they would start testing it, then they pulled it out. So all these guys were getting these amazing gains and then wondering why they stopped down the road. You know, we also know that you can order, you know, powder from China or whatever, just put a label in your garage and there's no real oversight. So for people listening, as far as the safety and the efficacy, you know, what steps have you taken to set yourself aside from that other world?
Yeah, I mean, anyone can get into the supplement space, which is why you see it's still a little bit of the Wild West. But now we've got tests like NSF testing. So this is if you're in a sport, if you work in the Olympic sports or professional sports, you know, you've got this stamp of approval, this process where you're getting everything tested in the batch, right? You're testing to make sure that everything that's what's on the label is actually in the product, that there's no, you know, other things added to the product. Oftentimes companies will want to add double the caffeine to their pre-workouts, you know, some of that ridiculousness. So this type of testing ensures all of that. And then it also tests for things like heavy metals and all these other contaminants that could possibly be in, which we just recently saw Consumer Reports with some of the protein blends showing higher levels of things like lead. So being able to see those stamps of approval is massive, right? And I think now you see some companies trying to skirt their way around that by showing you where the product comes from on their website, making it sort of look pretty. But it's actually, that doesn't prove anything, right? Unless you have that stamp on the product itself at NSF, or if you're in the rest of the world in Form Sport, then you really can't be confident that it's that what's in there is what it says, and also that it doesn't contain any of these contaminants. And, you know, if you're going to all that trouble to pay for something to feel better, you should, you know, it's the least we can do is to make sure it's of the highest quality and you're getting what it says on the tin.
Well, I think what sounds different to me, and I know you guys have sent me some, but it hasn't arrived yet, so I'm excited to try it. But when I think of guys and girls that will take some sort of shake with them on the rescue, on the engine, in the squad car, whatever it is, usually it's going to be just protein or maybe just creatine. So to have a complete kind of nutritional profile in the same kind of shake, again, not sounding too salesy, but I'm just, you know, again, everyone that comes on the show, it's something that I believe in too. You know, to have a meal rather than a sporting supplement, that sounds like it's, you know, it's got a lot more bang for its buck, because we're not known for being extremely well paid. So, you know, if you're going to spend money on supplementation, to have that vast spectrum of macro and micronutrients versus just, you know, protein, for example, it seems like, you know, bang for your buck, it seems like there's a lot more value as well than if, as we mentioned before, all the singular supplements that are lining up on our shelves.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And we see this in military, you know, like you said, you've got the protein and the carbohydrates and the calories, which is great. But when you're going, you know, abroad, on site, adding in the micronutrition, or if you're a tactical or fire, being able to complement the protein shake with the micronutrition, yeah, it's massive. It turns it into a proper meal. And to your point, like, yeah, it's still a premium product. We obviously offer, you know, discounts for military, for fire. But one of the ways as well, even when I work with clients, is like, hey, if we're taking this Monday to Friday, or if we're taking this during the busy periods when we're at work, we're going to have a massive impact. You're much better off to take something that's going to have signal, right? It's going to have an effect, than taking all these things that are, you know, you might as well be not taking anything, because it's just not going to have, you know, enough of an impact.
And that's the thing too, James, that we're talking about. I mean, in the tactical community, with first responders, cost is always, you know, a major issue, right? What is the cost, and how much is going to investments required in it? And I think that was the other thing, is that, you know, you're taking all those pills, that's a lot of money. And when I talked to Paul Winsper initially, Bubs's partner, and he was saying, listen, let's figure out a way we can get all these nutrients to the guys and to the first responders without or athletes, without breaking their wallet. And that was another thing I loved, right? So it's a way to kind of mitigate some of that cost that would be required to kind of hit all those pillars, but still get the highest level of efficacy across the board. So.
Brilliant. I got one more area, then we'll round off this conversation. But I know, Bubs, that you wrote one of your two books was Peak 40. So kind of looking at the older athlete and first responder professions, I got so much admiration for, you know, the old men and the young man's occupation, as they say. So talk to me about, you know, the kind of philosophies that you have in the older athlete or tactical athlete.
Yeah, well, I mean, my first book was called Peak, and this was a deep dive into performance, and it was like a 13.5 hour listen on Audible. So I had a lot of the coaches coming up to me saying, you know, Bubs, I like it, but, you know, what do I need? Like, give me the condensed version of this. So Peak 40 came out of that, you know, it's about 3.5 hours on Audible. So it's a little bit of a shorter listen. And again, it's about setting up a system for people. So we talked about it before, with this idea of like, let's get your morning right. You know, step one, if we get your morning right, you can repeat that. All of a sudden you don't have to think about that anymore. And you've a 30 of your day is now taken care of, right? We talk about the top and the tail of the day, you know, master your morning, I call it, and own your night. Like, if we can do well there, the middle of the day matters much less. And so the book is just really a straightforward way of applying a lot of the principles so that you can, you know, get to where you want to go without having to make it a full-time job, right? There's this famous quote from, you know, I think it was a golfer, Byron Nelson. And he's like, the best golfers are either thinking a lot about everything, or, you know, they have a very short list, you know? And he said, if you're somewhere in between, you're really going to struggle. So it's like, how do we automate things? How do we make it easier for people? And if we can automate your decisions, then all of a sudden you can get through your days and you're just making the right choices by reflex. You know, like you sit in your car, you don't think about putting your seatbelt on. You've just done it so many times, it's just automatic. And so that's Peak 40 is really all about that, trying to help simplify things for folks. And, you know, again, it's one of those things like nothing's changed in the research in protein in the last 10 years. But if you go online, you'd think they're having this raging debate on what's the right amount, right? And so trying to provide a bit of signal amongst all the noise is the aim. But as one of the scientists once said, it's like a fart in a hurricane, but we'll keep trying.
What about nutritionally? What does physiologically decline as we age that we need to be aware of as we progress through, you know, life?
Yeah, I mean, we become more anabolically resistant. So we actually need more protein as we go 50s and 60s and beyond, right? Which is key. So getting at least that 1.2 grams per kilo as your absolute worst day is a big one. You know, making sure we're getting in what we call polyphenols. These are these forms of antioxidants that are found in fruits and veggies. Actually, coffee and tea is half your intake is right there. So if you're a big coffee drinker, maybe you switch over to decaf. You get all the benefits of the polyphenols without the caffeine. Even for our, you know, beer drinkers out there, 2018 German national team, how did they rehydrate the guys in the bobsleigh? Non-alcoholic beer, right? You get all the polyphenols. It hydrates faster than water. Right. And then when they ask the doctor why that over water, he says, because I can get them to drink a shitload of it. Right. And so he said it in German. So so even then, like this idea around, you know, alcohol might hit you a bit harder as you get older. So whether it's adding a non-alcoholic beer here and there to help take the edge off, rehydrate a little bit so it doesn't interfere with the sleep. You know, these are some of the key ways. And from a training front, I mean, you guys do all the tactical work, but just being more efficient with what you're doing. You know, it's like you've got all these years of maybe training age behind you. We don't need to be pushing all the way up to that, you know, maximum recoverable volume. We can be more efficient with what we're doing. And as you probably see, Rolk, and I know with a lot of your work, like just getting people to move a little bit better, because the back pain, the shoulder stiffness, like the injuries become the real limiting factor of getting people to actually move, because they're like, oh, I tried that, but now I'm injured 3 weeks in. You're like, oh, shit. Okay.
Dude, that's what it is, Bubs. You know, James, too, it's like two steps forward, you know, like one step forward, two steps back. So guys, like what happens is like, they're like, it's not worth it. You'll hear that all the time. That's not worth it. Because they want to train hard, but they're like, there's a risk I'm going to get hurt and screw that. I don't want that. So that's the whole issue. Then they just don't train to begin with. And I think that's where we have to, you know, kind of, again, change the paradigm a bit. And where guys are looking at it from the perspective of, let's do enough. Let's move every day. Let's stay consistent. Because I think volume over time is really my focus rather than just intensity sporadically. So that's kind of my mantra as of late.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, if you talk, I've had Dr. Stuart McGill on the show, for example, you know, talking about the back injuries. And when I told him about the shifts, he's like, well, it's not if you're going to get hurt, it's when you're going to get hurt. Because as you know, when we do train and we take our job seriously, it's when we sleep is when we heal, when we, you know, are reinforcing the body. So you have that ongoing element that, yeah, you have to acknowledge that the way that we're worked at the moment, you will get hurt if you keep training. And, you know, what's the alternative? That you don't train? Well, that's unacceptable either. So another, you know, great point from the rest and recovery perspective. But from just sheer aging, what I found now at 50, 51, is that if I can just work on mobility, so I'm glad our coaching has actually changed our programming to Wolf Brigade now. So we're doing a lot of mace work and you know, all those kind of things. So it really is, you know, working on that. It's phenomenal. But I'm not looking to get stronger anymore. I'm not looking to get fitter. I want to get more mobile, which in turn will make me more efficient and therefore stronger at fit and fitter at 50. But I think if you're at this age now, still chasing PRs rather than working on deficits and weaknesses, I think that's when middle-aged men and women get hurt.
Yeah, 100%.
I totally agree, bro. And totally agree.
If I could circle back and throw one more in on the nutrition front.
Please.
As we get older, we do, you know, our blood glucose control worsens as well, right? So the bag of Haribos that you're having at 50, or I'm having at almost 50, is not the same as when we were 20, 24, 25, right? In terms of recovery. So that's the one where we talked about ultra processed food. We talked about diet quality. like in the 30s and 40s, we're trying to build a little bit of those habits so that when we get to 50 or 60, we got a better chance of onboarding ourselves versus like going from the fully processed to that, you know, heavy fruit and veg and you know, whole grain diets, tough one. So that would be a big one of, you probably notice, you know, whether it's sugary snacks or other things, like it's going to have a bigger effect as the older you get.
Brilliant. Great. All right. Well, for people listening then, where are the best places to find ProBio itself?
I would say GovX. GovX is the best way to go. We just partnered with GovX and I wanted to get it on there because, I mean, predominantly that's where everyone goes in the first responder community to get their products. I mean, they get it at a great price. But yeah, that's the best place to go. I would say GovX, or you can go to probionutrition.com as well to get more background on everything. But I 100% support it. It's an amazing company, amazing product, and got guys like Bubs and Paul and a great, incredible team behind it. So,
well, Bubs, for people, if they want to learn more about you, where are the best places online for that?
Yeah, I got a funny last name, so you can just Google me. DrBubs.com is the website. Happy to send out some books to your group too. There's some Peak 40 books, James. So give me your address. We'll get some sent over for you. You know, do a lot of work in tactical police and EMT. So definitely want to support the group. And that was a big part of our mission at ProBio, is like we want to be able to support the people that are doing the hard work. And we talk about this a lot, but you know, pro sports, we call it a high pressure environment. Obviously, it doesn't hold a candle to what you guys do. So, you know, it's definitely a big area of focus for us as well.
Thank you. And Rolk, what about you? If people want to learn more about you,
bro, it's people know enough about me, bro. All they need to know is I'll be fasting. I'm fasting in between meals. That's what you. That's what you need to say.
It's all wrong. No.
Just, I mean, like. No. I'm going to be trying to grow out my hair this year. No, it's not. That's not happening. But other than that, brother, my stuff, just my IG, Darolk, at, you know, DA_Rolk. But I'm good. I'm just supporting amazing companies and individuals like Bubs and, of course, yourself, James. Everything you do, and we didn't talk about you, bro, everything you're doing, not only for all the first responders, but specifically with the fire service and trying to advocate for that, you know, the shifts and giving guys more rest and getting more fit, bro. Amazing. You're such a legend, bro. I it's always great to get on your show.